are now going to listen to KAZI Book Review with Hopeton Hay.
I Came as a Shadow is the autobiography of John Thompson, the legendary former Georgetown University basketball coach who died in September of 2020. Thompson may be best known for his great basketball teams and becoming, in 1984, the first black coach to win the NCAA basketball championship. Written with sports journalist Jesse Washington, his autobiography, however, tells his whole story, sharing the racism he endured, the life lessons of his teachers, parents, and mentors, and of course, how he built Georgetown into a powerhouse. It also spotlights his commitment to the education of his players and his efforts to protect his Georgetown teams from the racial insults that were endemic at college basketball arenas. My guest today, Jesse Washington, co-wrote the autobiography of John Thompson and is a senior writer for The Undefeated, a platform at ESPN for exploring the intersections of race, sports, and culture. Jesse Washington, welcome to KACI Book Review.
I'm really glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
I have to admit that one of the reasons that I wanted to do the interview, despite the iconic figure of John Thompson, I've been a huge fan of John Thompson from his time at Georgetown, but I was at the Superdome in 1982 at the game, and I was a Sleepy Floyd fan, and I can remember how that game ended. And I was a Georgetown fan. I was a Sleepy Floyd fan. So for me, and I never forgot that because that's the only Final Four game I went to, and obviously the national championship. So do you remember that game?
I was younger. I do. I just remember that Georgetown lost. I remember, you know, Fred Brown giving the ball to James Worthy. So
I was not going to mention that. I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to bring back more bad memories for myself. But what was it? The 85% shooting of Villanova. More bad memories for me.
Man, that was the worst. That was the worst. I still feel like I don't feel that bad about the Carolina loss, but the Villanova one, I'm still upset about that to this day.
Right. And for the benefit of our audience, when Georgetown lost in the finals to Villanova, was that 19? That was 84, 83. I can't remember. 85. It was maybe the greatest, highest percentage shooting of a winning team possibly in the history of the NCAA finals.
I mean, close. It was bananas. Yeah, it was. I'll call it luck. Coach Thompson wouldn't call it luck in his book, but I will as a fan. I mean, they shot 75%. Georgetown had more rebounds, more assists, shot 50% from the floor, you know, but Villanova had one of those days. But I mean, Coach Thompson went to the championship game 3 out of 4 seasons. I'm not sure that anybody has done that since, definitely not before. So, but like he says in the book, you know, actually, what I would like to relate from the book toward that point is that he always wanted young people to know, don't be afraid of failure. Don't let the fear of failure keep you from pursuing your dreams. You got to go for it. He says, I lost far more big games than I won. So, you know, sometimes you kill the lion, he says, and sometimes the lion kills you. Either way, you hunt.
Well, what's remarkable about this autobiography is his desire to tell his whole story, not just the story of his success at Georgetown, but his whole story growing up. And what struck me was how he first recognized racism in the Catholic Church. He grew up in Washington, D.C., in the Catholic Church, and he recognized it when he was a child, when he found segregation and the way blacks had to wait behind whites at odds. And he got this as a young child with the priest saying, Jesus loves everyone. And so from a very, very young age, John Thompson got what was going on and saw the hypocrisy when it came to race at that point in time.
Absolutely. I mean, Coach, I'm so glad that he decided to tell the story of his upbringing, the story of his younger years, the story of the people who influenced him, because that explains so much of why he did the things he did later. And everybody, you know, who was criticizing him during his career, wondering, why would you do this? Why would you say these type of things? Why would you act this way? it's all laid out there in his early years. So I'm tremendously glad that he decided to tell that part of his story in such detail.
And he struggled in school, especially in the Catholic school. He ended up having to go to a public school in sixth grade when the Catholic school would not take him back. And one of the things he says in a book, I'm going to just quote him directly. "I would not be where I am today if not for," I may pronounce this incorrectly, "Sumedha Wallace Jackson." And she was his first teacher when he switched to public school for sixth grade and recognized he needed help with reading, but did it in a very loving and caring way, which he was really not getting prior to going to public school. Usually students are going to the private schools to get the special attention and all the things that they need, but he actually got it by going to a public school with a Black teacher that cared about him.
That's exactly right. And he credits her with saving his life. And just think about this. So Coach Thompson could not read and he went to an all-white Catholic school. And he says, you know, there may have been a white school that could have taught me or could have helped me, but, you know, they didn't. And it was a Black teacher who recognized I had a reading disability. I needed special help. But think about how close we came to not having the amazing intellect and intelligence of John Thompson, one of the most accomplished thinkers that sports has ever seen. But we almost didn't get that because the teachers could not properly help him. So, you know, it boggles my mind to think that Coach Thompson could have been another statistic and could have gone through life with some sort of, you know, doing a job like his father, working in a tile factory. Coach Thompson's father could not read or write, not because he was stupid, but because he had to go to work at an early age and never got a chance to go to school. And, you know, this is the kind of background that Coach Thompson came from. He could have ended up the same way were it not for Sumedha Wallace Jackson.
And even when he was looking for a teacher or tutor to help him with his reading disability, the two white tutors didn't think they could really help him. It was a Black tutor that actually opened the door for reading for him. And I think people, could you set the stage of what it was like to be a Black man, a Black child at that point in time? And this is what, 1950, 51, 52, early 1950s in America?
That's correct. Yes. So Washington, D.C. was segregated. They had slavery in Washington, D.C. His dad was from Southern Maryland, which was a slave state. And so Washington had segregation. Coach Thompson, early in life, went into a lunch counter and was refused the opportunity to sit down at the counter and eat. I'm not even going to tell about the poverty and the lack of opportunities that he experienced. I mean, what do you even say to something like that? He remembers vividly that in the newspaper at that time, when they advertised jobs, the ad for the job would say whites only, or the ads that were for, like, for ditch diggers or janitors would say Blacks only. And so this was the type of environment that he grew up in. But one of the biggest things that he describes about the environment is the mental conditioning that Black people were under due to this type of situation. When he was in the church and they made him sit in the back, and all Black people had to sit in the back of the church, and he became aware of the hypocrisy of saying Jesus loves everyone, but Black people don't get treated equally. He said the most dangerous thing was that we accepted it. I didn't get mad and throw a brick through the window of the church. I just accepted it. I accepted the fact that my father couldn't read or write as normal, and that Black people were mentally conditioned to accept what should be unacceptable. So this was the world that he grew up in.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to KAZI Book Review on KAZI 88.7 FM. I'm Hopeton Hay. My guest is Jesse Washington. He assisted the great late John Thompson in writing his autobiography, I Came as a Shadow, and John Thompson died earlier this year at the age of 78. So talk about the connection you had with John Thompson and how this partnership, this collaboration came about.
Well, Coach's children convinced him to write the book. And I'm so glad he did, because it's really a historical document of race and sports in America. And then they needed a writer. And he had a number of people who were in contention, and he did choose me. I think that he liked the fact that I knew about basketball. I was around the game. I had played it to a lesser extent. he liked the fact that I was a Black writer. I mean, he wanted a Black man to write his book. Not that he felt a white person could not understand his life, because he had many, many dear white friends and mentors, despite his reputation as a racist, which was totally bogus. But he wanted a Black guy to write his book. He wanted someone who had some experience, although he kept remarking to me when we first met, I had to kind of like, he raked me over the coals a little bit in our first, in the interview, trying to see what I was made of. And he kept saying, Jesse, you haven't written a book like this before. Why do you think you could write this one? He also asked me in that first meeting, why did you come dressed that way? You know, like I was dressed a little casually. So he was testing me in the early stages of our relationship to see if I could keep up, to see if I could collect his thoughts and make it coherent. But when our relationship went to another level was when I was writing some early chapters and he would share it with people who he valued their opinions, people who had known him for a long time, his children. And they said, this sounds like you. And that was really my biggest goal with the writing of this, to make sure that it sounded like Coach was speaking to you. Sometimes you read an autobiography and you're like, wow, this doesn't sound like, you know, whoever this figure is. It sounds like the writer is doing their own thing. I wanted to make sure to do Coach's thing. He has such a distinctive way of speaking. The way he delivers his stories and his wisdom is so remarkable. That was what I wanted to preserve in the book. So once I got to that point, he trusted me more. And we continued from there.
One of the things that he talked about was going back to his sixth grade teacher, how she taught him how important it was to protect the feelings and dignity of students. And he was criticized for protecting his players, but he knew that he had to give them an opportunity to be able to grow and develop without the harsh over-scrutiny of the media, and understand the types of stereotypes that they were battling, that if you were a Black player, it was all athletics, it was not intelligence, that you were undisciplined. And I think what the book revealed for me was the deep, extensive racism, overt and covert, not only that he faced in his career, but he had faced as a coach that he had to protect his players against. And it was just, it was mind-boggling, the amount of racism, the racist signs being put up at games, the threatening calls that were made, that he had to try as much as possible to protect his players from at Georgetown University.
I mean, thank you for raising that point, because I still get emotional thinking about it. And they had the audacity. And when I say they, I mean a significant percentage of the population that would call him a racist because he had a mostly Black team. What else did you expect? He was from Washington, D.C., a mostly Black city. Most of the people in D.C., most of the outstanding basketball players, due to cultural factors, are Black. He said, if I was coaching hockey, I would have had a white team. And then they didn't want those Black kids there at Georgetown. They didn't think that they belonged there, including Coach. You know, but he had to protect his players from this, and he had to absorb their mistakes as his. Getting back to Samantha Wallace Jackson, she taught him to protect people and to absorb his players' mistakes as his. And so Coach says, I got as much from Samantha Wallace Jackson, a fifth grade Black woman teacher in DC, as I did from some of the greatest minds in coaching. You know, that's an amazing thing to me. The level of racism he faced was atrocious. It was unconscionable. It was flipped around in some sort of psychological trick to make it seem like he was the one who was racist because he had a Black team. And quite frankly, I'm surprised that Coach didn't cuss out a few people in his book over it.
He did like to curse a little bit. He did like as to he admits in the book, he did like to curse. But his first real mentor when it came to coaching was Red Auerbach. And that is an incredible story, that Red Auerbach, the legendary Boston Celtics coach, general manager, got to know him because he was friends with the coach of the high school team that John Thompson played on. And he took him on these trips, these summer jaunts where he worked at resorts in the Catskill Mountains, Jewish resorts where he worked there. And I think they played basketball too. So two of his mentors, Red Auerbach and the legendary Dean Smith of the University of North Carolina, his right. mentors.
Absolutely.
This is, and I didn't know this until I read the autobiography.
I didn't know it until Coach told me. And I thought I knew all there was to know about Coach Thompson. But see, this wasn't portrayed when they were saying Coach Thompson is paranoid. He's too controlling. He won't let us interview his players. He's too overprotective. He got all of that from two of the greatest coaches ever, you know, Red Auerbach and Dean Smith. But nobody applied that label to them when they did it. They were smart. They were in charge. But when the big black coach does it, then he's paranoid. He's a bully. He's, you know, it ain't paranoia if they're really out to get you. That's what Coach says in the book.
Right.
It's just being smart. And much of America was really out to get Coach Thompson. You know, it's funny. Somebody just recently in a conversation of the book, and this goes to what he faced, mentioned that their brother, this is a friend of mine, and he mentioned that, and this is a white friend of mine. He said, yeah, my brother hated the Hoyas because he said they had a bunch of criminals on the team. False. Totally portrayed that way by the media. These were just normal college kids. They didn't get in any more trouble than anybody else. But because they were black guys at Georgetown who played with an edge, who if you push them, they would push back, then they were perceived or labeled and miscast as thugs and criminals. I mean, come on. Now, were there a couple? Yes, but no more so than any other team. And those that were criminals, Coach Thompson got them out of there right away. Of his own volition. You know, if you didn't do what you were supposed to do at Georgetown, if you didn't go to class, if you didn't study, if you didn't represent yourself and the university is the right way, you were out of there. So it's infuriating to me, even all these years later, how racist the response to Coach Thompson and his success was. He's a lot calmer about it in his book than I am right now.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to KAZI Book Review on KAZI 88.7 FM. I'm Hopeton Hay. My guest is Jesse Washington. He co-wrote the autobiography, I Came as a Shadow, an autobiography of the late John Thompson, who just died this year at the age of 78. And for those of you that aren't basketball fans, he was the first black college basketball coach to win the NCAA championship. He was the first black to be on the board of the National Association of Basketball Coaches. And Dean Smith, the legendary coach of the University of North Carolina, he was the coach when Michael Jordan made the famous shot in 1982 to defeat Georgetown with 16 seconds left at the Superdome in New Orleans to win the NCAA championship, recruited him for the National Association of Basketball Coaches, helped to get him on the board, and would kick him under the table to take on folks who were being too easy on racism and black issues, which is really, really interesting. Dean Smith got it, got John Thompson on that committee, said, all right, John, he even had to push back against black coaches because, Jesse, what I love about Thompson and what I loved about Georgetown is you do not have to stop being aggressive. You do not have to turn the other cheek when players literally would attack the great Patrick Ewing, trying to get him to lose his temper, trying to get him into a fight. And they wanted Georgetown to turn the other cheek. And John Thompson said, no.
Yes. I mean, that is tremendous. And that applies across the board to the way Coach dealt with all of the resistance. They wanted him to quiet down. They wanted him since he was portrayed as a bully, to speak differently, to lower his voice, to not be aggressive. They wanted his teams to play less aggressively, and he refused to do any of that. He refused to accommodate any of these folks who told him he should change his natural pursuit of greatness, how he should act differently or be held to some different standard than all these other coaches, the white coaches. He wasn't having any of it. He kept doing what he knew was right. He insisted on the rights that God gave him. And he said, just because you guys are scared of a big black guy and feel that I'm trying to intimidate you, I'm not going to lower my voice. Absolutely not. If I want to yell and scream at my players or the referees, just like all these other coaches, you don't tell that to Bobby Knight, you know? And he lived that out to the fullest. And I think that's why we just, you know, I could tell how proud you were of what he did. And we all growing up in that era saw that, and why he made an impact on us, and why Black America just gravitated to his team like that. Because despite all of the attacks that they received, they stood strong, they overcame, they didn't change, and they won. And so it was a real it felt like all of Black America and a lot of white folks too were really behind Georgetown, and they were representing us in the best way fashion, in the best fashion possible. And one of the ways that they represented us, and Coach Thompson is very clear in his book, is everywhere we went as a team, we were wearing jackets and ties. We didn't slouch around in the lobbies. We didn't talk loud in restaurants. He said, I loved to come into a banquet sometimes late on purpose, and my team filed in and everybody was wearing ties and jackets. It said that Georgetown has a different standard. I love that. You know, he wanted to make an impact on people visually through this presentation of excellence. You know, one of the many reasons why we love them so much.
All right, I'm gonna have to tap myself down. I'm getting super excited about the great, late, great John Thompson. One of the lessons his father taught him, he said at a young age, study the white man to learn how the system works. And at the beginning of his second year at Georgetown, he writes, now I was about to make the white man's system conform to me. I love that statement.
Yo, I mean, you know, I would ask him something like, well, coach, you know, I guess by the time you got to Georgetown, you really taken your father's advice to study the white man and you really understood everything that was going on. And he would say, huh, yeah, now I was about to make them conform to me. And he did. And he did. And, you know, one of the things that he says about Georgetown over and over is they never tried to stop me from being me. Georgetown recognized who he was, the value that he brought, the morals and integrity that he had. You know, the current president of Georgetown University, Jack DeJoya, has been there for 20 years and has known Coach Thompson for longer than that and was his boss. And he really credits Thompson with being the exemplar of all of Georgetown's values when it comes to education, when it comes to doing the right thing. And it's amazing. He has had a profound effect on Georgetown. When he got out there, Georgetown wasn't famous. Georgetown wasn't this super elite academic institution. The endowment has gone up. The grades and SAT scores of the incoming class has gone way up because Georgetown got a national reputation based on what John Thompson did with basketball.
And let's remind our listeners that their record the year before John Thompson got there, I believe, was 3-23. Did I get that right?
You got it exactly right. 3-23? Are you serious? But you know what they say, just when it can't get any worse, they give the job to a Black man. So, but this one did something with it.
Now, he was also under pressure to play more white players. It was a student article that criticized the loss of a student article in a student newspaper at Georgetown University that criticized the loss and basically said that the players weren't playing intelligent and that they needed to bench those players and bring on the white players. And he really understood the type of criticism his players would receive and refused to bow down to those attempts to one, stereotype the Black players as not being intelligent, and two, not paying attention to the pressure that he was under at times. And this not only happened at Georgetown University, I also believe it happened at where he, when he coached at, St. Anthony's, the Catholic high school he was the coach of prior to going to Georgetown. He was under the same pressure, play more white players.
Yeah, I mean, they were consistently demanding that he needed more white guys. And then he always recruited white guys. He had plenty of white players before they started saying he was racist. And then other people started lying and saying, oh, Coach Thompson, to the white recruits, like, oh, Coach Thompson's just recruiting you so he could have a token. You're not going to play. He just needs a white face on his team to take some of the heat off. Absolutely not. And those accusations hurt him to his core. One of those accusations, false accusations, came from his high school coach, someone he had respected and admired. And Coach Thompson never spoke to him again. And the high school coach tried to make amends with him towards the end of his life. And Coach Thompson refused to respond. And he feels bad about that. He says in his book, that's one of the things that I hope Jesus forgives me for. But he was so hurt by this lie that he would only recruit a white kid to have a white face on his team that he just said, I'm not going to have anything to do with this person. It's amazing the ways that we see race interact with each other and play with each other in this book. It really sums up like so much of American history And so many of Coach Thompson's experiences apply to the things that happen outside of basketball. And that's why he always said from the very beginning when we were working on this project, Jesse, this isn't a book about basketball. I don't want to write a book about basketball, about how to run the fast break, about how to do the full court press. It's about more than that. And so I hope that he succeeded in delivering these lessons that apply to what's going on in this country right now.
I want to take a walk down memory lane as we get ready to wrap up this interview. And there was a player called Rabbit that he admired when he was playing ball and growing up in Washington, D.C. And I had no idea that Elgin Baylor, the legendary Laker player who never won a championship before Wilt Chamberlain was setting scoring records, it was actually Elgin Baylor who was setting scoring records playing for the Los Angeles Lakers. I don't recall whether he joined them prior to them or after they went to Los Angeles or when they were in Minneapolis. So for our audience who may not, they may say, Elgin Baylor, I know who LeBron James is. I even remember Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson. But they may be saying, Jesse, who the heck is Elgin Baylor?
Man, Elgin Baylor is legitimately one of the absolute greatest to ever play this game. All that hang time that Jordan had, Baylor had that first. Coach said that when they were growing up in D.C., Elgin Baylor was maybe 4 or 5 years older than him, that they would watch Elgin play and he could change directions in midair. You know, I mean, this guy was phenomenal. Here's how good Elgin Baylor was. Okay. Aside from the fact that Coach Thompson said, if you're counting the best players to ever come out of D.C., put Elgin at number one, skip over 2, 3, 4, 5, and then start from there, including that boy, Kevin Durant. And that's a direct quote. So Coach Thompson played for the Boston Celtics, one of the greatest dynasties in the history of sports. Bill Russell, Sam Jones, Casey Jones, you know, Havlicek, all these guys. They used to make fun of Coach Thompson because he respected and loved Elgin so much. Oh, there goes your boy. He can only go right. Elgin can only go right. They used to, you know, make that joke. They played the Lakers with Elgin Baylor. Now, they had Sam Jones, one of the best defenders in the league, sticking Elgin. And if he got by Sam Jones, had Bill Russell, the greatest shot blocker in the history of the game, behind him. Elgin Baylor scored 62, but he could only go right. You know, I mean, it's so, Coach Thompson is such a bridge between eras. It goes from Red Auerbach and Elgin Baylor all the way up to Allen Iverson, who we never would have known who Iverson was if Coach had not rescued him from a racist conviction and put him on his team. And I'm still amazed by the breadth of his experience, the impact he had on all these different generations. It's truly an amazing American story.
I Came as a Shadow, an autobiography, John Thompson, written with Jesse Washington. And John Thompson died this year at the age of 1978, one of the greatest coaches in basketball of all time. Thank you so much, Jesse Washington, for being a guest on KZL Book Review.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this podcast edition of KAZI Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay. Subscribe to us under Hopeton Hay Podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and many other sources of podcasts. If you like this interview, be sure to rate it. Rate it a 5. Give us 5 stars. You can follow KAZI Book Review on Twitter under at KAZI Books. You can also follow us under Facebook under KAZI Book Review with Hopeton Hay. And you can also follow us on Instagram under KAZI_book_review. Thank you once again for listening to the KAZI Book Review podcast.